everybody. Welcome back to a special edition of the Reawakening Podcast. I am Brian Ingraham. It is my heart to see you helped, to see you take a great leap in your relationship with God. I have dedicated this season here, season three of the Reawakening Podcast, to this concept of burst moments, of boosting moments, where we're hearing stories of people's lives where they have had different times in their lives where they've taken leaps, and where it hasn't just been a gradual process with Jesus, but there's been some intentionality, and as a result, some big boosting moments. So I want to see you helped. And so, as I say every time, it's my heart to see our whole generation reawaken to walk in fresh, close, long-lasting, life-giving connection to the God of the Bible. And I believe this is possible for you, whatever your situation. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of something different for season three, something that's probably a lot like season one, season two. I have this autumn, this past autumn here, done a 40-day fast for spiritual reasons. And doing this, you know, I think it spooked a lot of people. There was a lot of people that were nervous about, like, what's going on here. I was not at my best. I was actually pretty miserable at some points, nearly bedridden at a few points. And I'll talk about that. But people want to know, what was it like? There's a lot of people who don't know anybody who's done a 40-day fast. Now, I did it for spiritual reasons and some physical reasons, but like spiritual reasons. And I think that this will be clearly seen to be a spiritually significant boost moment in my life. Am I encouraging you to do a 40-day fast? No. But as you saw at, I think, the end of season one, I did talk about fasting. It has been my normal practice to fast three times a year for 5 days. And, I do it January and April and August. And a few other times, I have done a little bit longer fast. When I started my sabbatical, I started that with a 10-day fast. And then when I was in just a real squeeze moment with the church and feeling really stuck about a lot of things, I was desperate. And so I dove into a 21-day fast in 18. I guess that's January of 2018. And from that point on, you could really see some shifting. I think you could see some major shifting from the 2018 fast with the church and going from one location to multi-location starting that year. The 10-day fast, at the beginning of my sabbatical, that was a very significant sabbatical for me in just kind of calming down and discovering the path of peace. Now, with all my other fasts, I have done just not eating. And I have really been focused, juice or whatever is fine. Drinking it is fine, but like not eating food. And I have found them to be extremely spiritually powerful. I mean, people can like maybe try and spiritually rate fast, like, oh, if it's water only, then it's like a real, real fast. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if that's actually true. I know that in the Bible, you even have some examples of dry fasting, which is no food or water. And you can see that in the book of Esther calls people to a dry fast. Now that's really extreme. I'm not really into the whole like, ooh, this is a more significant fast than another fast. Biblical fasting is basically no food. And so I tend to be like, your fast, your rules. And I just try and stay with, I usually just go with juice fasting. Now, there's lots of reasons in the Bible for fasting. You see like people fasting for grief or for sin or for there's a crisis going on and they need God's help. They're starting ministry like Jesus, stuff like that. Anyway, but for me, why did I fast? Well, I wasn't feeling lost or like I needed guidance. Another reason for biblical fasting. I didn't feel like I needed guidance, although I did receive some during this time. I was motivated by compassion. I did this series in the spring about deliverance and teaching people, Equipped to Bring Freedom, I believe it was called. And again, teaching people like how to help people be free. And since then, that was like a significant time in my journey of Jesus, where I'm like, I have such a passion to see people helped and free. And I kind of discovering that there's so many people stuck with things that they don't understand, specifically in the area of deliverance ministry. In our world today, we do not think about demons or much at all. And we don't really think of the implications of the liars and the demonic harassments that we are under. I mean, a lot of Christians think they're immune to that stuff. They are not. They're being impacted by it. And so I just have such a passion for that. And out of this growing fire, this growing desire to see people helped and free, I've been praying for people throughout the summer and then into the autumn here. And I realized that I can't help everybody. Like, I don't have 5 hours for everybody. Sometimes it takes a long time. And so I've been seeking God. I need more breakthrough help. I need more people around me who can help me with this ministry. But also I need things to go quicker. And can you just, out of compassion, I don't know, supercharge the deliverance work in a life on Sundays or as I pray for people in the big week. And during the autumn, I felt like God was kind of leading me into this time of fasting. And one of the concepts was walk the path of Jesus. Brian, I want you to walk the path of Jesus. Look, when he started his ministry, he was baptized by water, which you've done. And then he went into the wilderness, and we think of it as the temptation, but really he went into the wilderness where he didn't eat for 40 days, where he fasted for 40 days. And it's those two things, his water baptism and his time of temptation. Now, he was tempted at other times as well, but it was really that 40-day fasting time which set him up for his ministry. And then after that, he returns and does some radically different things. He starts preaching, he starts casting out demons, and he starts healing the sick, especially after that moment there. So I was kind of like, walk the path of Jesus. Now, I didn't go into this with any promises like, if you do this, then you will be free, and then you will have all this breakthrough in your life. But I just thought, you know what? Even for the chance, even for the possibility that I could help a little bit more people, or maybe a lot more people, but at least a little bit more people, or a little bit quicker, it's worth it to me. I will try this, and I will go 40 days without eating. Now, that was the fasting call, 40 days without eating. Now, I personally wanted to try water fasting. And the reason why I wanted to try water fasting, I mean, that's purely physical. It wasn't spiritual at all. And I watched some Chris Hemsworth documentary on, I don't know, probably Disney Plus or something like that. And it was just like a 4-day water fast. But it was talking about the physical benefits of it. It's actually not worth watching it. It has such little content to it, but I started researching. It got in my mind. I think the Spirit started working on that in my mind. And then I found some websites, including probably the most helpful one, waterfasting.org, and I just started reading about the physical benefits of water fasting. And the large difference physically in going from a water-only fast versus a juice fast. Now, spiritually speaking, I just needed to not eat food. But I thought, well, whilst I'm not eating food, maybe I'll see about some physical benefits as well. So that's why I kind of did the water-only thing. But my motivation was to see breakthrough in people's lives, to see compassion. I wasn't seeking guidance. I was just seeking more of God's help, specifically in prayer ministry and breakthrough for people's lives. So let me talk you through my experience and what was going on there. Before starting a 40-day fast, I wanted to be really intentional. And so, I mean, I wasn't the best at being intentional, but there was a few things that I was intentional about. You're supposed to really cut back your food. And part of that is because you don't want to have food in your stomach for 40 days, you know, the stuff that doesn't go, process all the way through, because your body ends up shutting down. And if you have like stuff in your intestines, for 40 days, that gets kind of toxic and all that sort of stuff. So you're supposed to cut down on food. And I kind of did a little bit, but I wasn't fantastic about that. But I did cut back on coffee and caffeine. And so, you know, reducing my amounts and so that I can start my first day water. Now, when I say water only, friends, I literally mean only water, and either warm water or cold water. That was it. I didn't have any like drops of lemon or any tea or anything considered fine for most kind of fasts. I just went pure water only on this. And man, I got to the point of just loathing water, but again, we're ahead of ourselves. But I cut down on caffeine and I noticed that the day before I was quite stressed. As you might imagine, you're like, I'm gonna go 40 days without eating. I remember I got out of my car at Southside Church. It was an office day on Tuesday there, and I vomited a little bit on the curb. I was like, wow, I must be stressed. This is kind of weird. It was just a little bit, but I'm like, man, this is. I can tell that I'm intimidated by this. Now, one of the things that the enemy uses to keep us from the powerful discipline of fasting is fear. It is probably the greatest adversary of fasting. It's probably the number one thing that keeps people from this very spiritual, powerful discipline or experience, fasting. Fear is the number one thing. But again, I don't let fear run my life, or I try not to. Honestly, you're going to hear in my story that how much it does affect me, but it is so important to me to try and say no to fear when it comes to fasting. And so I had that and building up to it, but then day one came. And what this is not my first fast, as I said, and I have had a lot of fasting experience. And so I knew two things were going to be important spiritually as I started this fast. Number one, I wrote down my fasting aims and objectives. Like, this is what I'm fasting about. And the prime focus, and I was very clear on that, is about breakthrough and just more authority when it comes to deliverance ministry and prayer ministry. But then some other things like the finances situation, you know, thinking about the church and wanting to see that really move from scrappy to healthy and thriving. And, you know, I would like to see even more locations in the future and all that sort of stuff. So the financial situation, provision, and also some things about my family. But the main thing being, those were just like tack-ons. The main thing being the deliverance stuff. So, I picked this 40-day window from the, I don't know, nearest the end, 7 days from the end of October to the 4th of December, 40 days. That's a hard window to find things that don't conflict. You know, I had some friends coming into town. American Thanksgiving was during that window. Some difficult times in there. But man, when are you ever going to find 40 days that are just going to be easy? And I mean, it's never easy. So I wrote down the purposes and went to town. So on morning one, I'm sitting there on the sofa and I deal with things spiritually first. And I rebuke spirit of fear. I say, spirit of fear, in the name of Jesus, you are not allowed to harass me today. You're not allowed to harass me during this fasting time. And man, I was manifesting. I mean, like coughing and stuff like that. Like I'm going to town because I know how much fear can really mess with us. And if it doesn't keep us from fasting, at least it makes us more miserable than we need to be. Fear makes us more miserable than we need to be. So there I am rebuking fear. And then I am commanding my body not to lie to me. I'm like, I reject all lies and all fears in the name of Jesus. And again, I'm feeling, you know, I'm coughing, and I'm feeling this, because your body lies to you when you start to fast. You're not starving. It is a fact, unless you're intensely underweight. You usually carry about 100,000 extra calories in your body. And that's well enough for 40 days of not eating. I don't know if you've ever done this before, but like, if you 2,000 calories a day for 40 days is about 80,000 calories. Usually, unless you're underweight, that's not going to be a problem while you're fasting. So I'm not starving. My body will just be upset at me. So again, rebuking those things, and those two practices hugely positively impacted my days. My first 2 days of fasting, I felt amazing. There was no lies. There was no fear. I felt calm. My brain started to get faster and faster. Great. I was really surprised about those first 2 days. And then I hit day three and it was awful. I had no energy. Now that's pretty normal, because day three on a fast, especially a water only fast, Well, actually, probably exclusively on a water-only fast, when I'm not having any sugars at all, where I'm not having any juices at all, my body has to switch over to ketosis. You've heard of the keto diet probably, but like where it's taking different fuel sources and it struggles to make that transition, which usually happens on day three. I remember Laura was moving that day and I was going to help. I was like completely worthless on that day. I was miserable and just so weak. It was a really difficult moment physically wise. And then days fours and fives, I just started to get stronger and stronger and kind of recovering as my body switched over. My brain, again, I can't even tell you how much my brain was just alert. I made sure that I was doing my Jesus times. I'm not on a hunger strike. I'm here to meet and talk with Jesus. Now, I didn't have a lot to say. I mean, he knew my request, but kind of just bringing it before him and also doing a lot of reading. Got a few extra books for this season. I knew my energy levels were going to be low and I didn't want to just veg out with Netflix or TV. What a waste of a fast. Instead, I wanted to like make sure I was pouring into myself and doing some extra Bible reading. It was in those days where I felt like God gave me a great verse for my fast. And it was in 2 Thessalonians. It's like one of those things where I don't even know if I remember this verse. But it said in 2 Thessalonians 1:11, it said, "May he give you the power to accomplish all the good things your faith prompts you to do." And I read that and I'm like, that's what I'm wanting, especially when it comes to praying for people. The thing, when my faith prompts me to pray for people, I want God to give me the power to accomplish the good things. Seeing freedom in people's lives. So that became a verse in those early days that I hung on to during the fast. So yeah, kept going there. And then, so that was the first 5 days. And 5 days is very normal for me. And then I pushed into day six, and I would say day six through 14. Now, usually, if you're new to fasting, every week you have a bit of a challenge. Because your body is detoxing. It's really fascinating as I did the research on it. Your body is healing. It doesn't feel great, but your body is healing itself when you're water only fasting. And apparently, and you can look at waterfasting.org for more information on this, but apparently, like, as you go through life, your body deals with toxins, and your body's really great with it, but there, you know, there's toxins in everything. There's toxins in the food we eat, and I'm not, it's fine, because you've got, I mean, and I'm not saying, like, dangerous toxins, like, you know, animals, they might eat, you know, foods that are, I don't know, have pesticides, I don't know, I'm not really, I don't want to scare anybody, but like, but plants are the same way, you know, like with fertilizers or just whatever. And the government does a good job trying to protect us from this stuff and making laws about that. But there still is stuff. And even in, you know, if you have ibuprofen or medicines or stuff like that, there's like poisons in that, like in, that are helpful for us, I guess. But your body accumulates toxins and it has a great system for dealing with it. That's why I'm not worried about it. You know, our body can filter it through and clean it out. Sometimes, though, your body isn't able to process it all, and so it apparently shoves some of those toxins into fat cells. And so it kind of stores them away, and that is effective, and it kind of keeps that away. But as you start fasting and you start opening up or getting rid of the stuff in these fat cells that have been around for a long time, that have been storing things, usually about every week, you kind of have a little bit of a light sickness or some toxins that are kind of come out and you know, for a day or two, and it's called a healing crisis, and you kind of feel particularly bad, and then you get through it, and you've actually taken a healing step in your life physically, where some of the toxins that were just stored there are now dealt with when your body was stronger. Because when you're fasting, your immune system is on fire and it's able to deal with things that it wasn't able to deal with before. You're not digesting food, and so your brain is sharper, but also your immune system is sharper. And so it's quite a healing, powerful process. So they say every week or so. Now, I didn't have one of those at day seven because I've done a few longer fasts, juice fasts, but I guess apparently it had done enough, it dealt with enough fat cells, I guess, to not be a problem. And so I didn't notice my normal detoxing symptoms. Like when I did my 10-day fast or my 21-day fast, I would get like these big boils, like just, you know, your body's detoxing, it's trying to come out of the skin, and then there'd be like breath issues because your body's detoxing. And I mean, it's kind of gross stuff, but it's good. You're getting the bad stuff out. So I was just detoxing. I noticed less than before. So I was like, okay, so those juice fasts that I did were quite effective at this. I was kind of taking baths in those early days because I was so cold, but I sort of stopped somewhere around day 8 or 9 because I realized, my body was hurting when I was doing that. And I also became nervous that I would be sweating out too many minerals. One of the other things, I mean, people think of like, oh, you're going to run out of calories or whatever, which could happen if you're underweight in a 40-day fast. But probably the more dangerous thing is the minerals in your blood. And I didn't want to sweat out all the minerals. So I kind of slowed that down in those days. But my mind was constantly on fire. I wasn't sleeping. I was thinking all through the night, thinking it wasn't affecting my daytime, though. And I was just thinking about so much. And I was generally at peace about my fasting. My mornings were going slow. I tend to be a morning person these days, but not during that fasting time. It took me a long time to kind of wake up and get going. I noticed some weird symptoms like having some antsy legs or again, feeling a little bit headache, dehydration after like baths or showers the night before. But, you know, I was just noticing I was pretty spiritually alert. And day 8 of my fast was Halloween. Now, Halloween, I have nothing to do with that. I spend time praying for innocents who are going to be harmed. It is a very real and evil witchcraft active day, and where they're actively doing curses, where they're doing animal sacrifices, where there are people, children are being harmed and abused in evil ways, and so I hate it. I do not do anything with it. I encourage Christians to just avoid, to not try and make it some sort of cute thing. There's so much evil going on, and so I tend to be more in a prayer and intercession mode. God, let the kids who are going to be abused today, let them escape. Let something happen. Help them be free from any ritual satanic abuse and those innocents who are going to be harmed today, let them be free. I'm a little bit off track here. But anyways, I woke up at 3 a.m, which is a very common moment, just so alert. And I'm like, someone's trying to curse me or the church. And I could just, I was like so vivid. And I think that's part of the process of being dialed in and being connected to God in that kind of fasting, humbling way. And I was just so alert to it. I just rebuking that in the name of Jesus, shutting that down. There's no curse coming against my church or my life or my family, you know, none of that, and kind of shut it down and went back to bed. But spiritually alert during those days. So then we got to day 14 again, which would have been another one of those healing crisis moments, but I didn't have one of those. And again, I have, you know, done the 21-day fast, and I still wasn't noticing at this point major detox symptoms as normal. Like sometimes I'd get intense back pains and knots and all that kind of stuff. Just wasn't having that sort of a thing. I started between day 14 and 21, I would say I was just loathing water. I remember this one moment. There was this like just cheap, you know, pizza, just cheap pizza, like, you know, from the store, like maybe a pound pizza, you know, and I could smell it in the house, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll just lick the pizza. I mean, that's kind of where I was. I found myself hungry all the time, but not like super hungry, but kind of constantly hungry. And so I just had these like these kind of weird thoughts in these areas. So this is, I guess, week 3. So after 2 weeks of fasting, I found myself like screenshotting recipes. My Instagram became all food. I mean, it just like all these recipes, and I was kind of screenshotting them. I found myself flying around on Google Maps and searching for restaurants and looking at their menus. I might be walking down the street and kind of just stop and look at the menu. And I think about, you know, that great future day whenever I would eat again now, which at this point was like more than three weeks away. And just like, you know, where might I go and eat, or what kind of things? And I remember I had the most intense cravings for fish and chips during that time. I still haven't had fish and chips. I don't have any craving for fish and chips right now. Maybe it's the salt, you know, salt and the minerals, but man, I remember just thinking about food all the time. There was a memorial service for Alan Cullen during that time. And I think that was on day 19. And I noticed on day 19 that I was, something was shifting, and I was slowing down more. I read the Bible at his memorial service, and you know, it's kind of something I do, right? Like that's not a weird thing for me to read the Bible, but man, I just couldn't, I was stumbling and bumbling. I was messing it up, my brain wasn't working very well for reading or for being up in front and speaking. And so it's like, very thankful that Laura ran that memorial service. But yeah, I just really noticed some shifts on day 19. Also, like I was there at the memorial service, and for some reason, all the memorial service food looked amazing. And I was like, oh, just day 19 was quite a struggle. And the sad thing about day 19, you've been doing this for a long time at this point, and yet you're not even halfway done. There was a certain amount of misery, of constant misery. When people would ask me how I'm doing, I'm like, it's awful. Like, it was really awful. I was not having a good time. And I don't mind saying that. You know, it's not everything that God asked us to do is up for a good time. And definitely that was my experience there. I suppose as I got near day 20, I made a decision, because that was only halfway, which I'm telling you, friends, that it just felt like impossible at this point. You know, halfway, 20 days, no eating. Oh my goodness. And that's only half. But I made a decision to stop being so obsessive about food, like, or reading about re-entry. I mean, on the waterfasting.org stuff, I got some like re-entry into food sort of information. And I was always thinking, I was meal planning for the first week or two. I'm like, you know what? I just need to stop obsessing over food, and I need to stop thinking about it as much. And instead, I want to spend these next 20 days just pushing that aside and leaning in even more spiritually. And a lot of the hours, I mean, literally so much time thinking about food and menus. And I was inspired to become a, you know, like wanting to cook all these meals myself. And I mean, that would be a disaster. I'm not really a good cook yet, but yeah, just stop thinking about those things intentionally. So then I got into day 21 to 32, and that was new charted territory for me. And that's when I started noticing some new detox symptoms. I got a few huge boils, painful boils. I had to buy a tongue scraper because, you know, I'm brushing my teeth, but I don't want the toothpaste. I had to wash out my mouth with water after I brush my teeth, and especially brush my tongue. And there was just such this like, I don't know, like a crusty stuff on my tongue. And I had to get that's probably gross, but like, I'm seriously detoxing at this point. And going through that, it was during those days where Thanksgiving happened, and man, that was a little bit a challenge. And in those days, I had my first really major health crisis, and I noticed on a day where I just started getting nauseous. And I'm like, oh, I think this is the health crisis. I think some toxins are being released from my body, and I'm needed to... I'm kind of alert to that. The next day, I was feeling particularly ill, but I knew it was a health crisis and not like a it's time to end the fast crisis sort of a thing. But I got through that, and then on the second night, I suppose, in the middle of the night, it was kind of like a low grade fever broke, and then I was back to fine the next day. That's pretty normal. Like 1 to 2 days of kind of healing crises, because you're getting some of those toxins exposed, your body's dealing with it, and then they're done. And Yeah, it's a real new lease on life. I haven't talked about this, but you can look up on waterfasting.org or whatever, just how the body heals itself when it's doing a water-only fast at a cellular level, how it makes things strong. And there's some pretty extreme things that can be your body can heal itself of. The guy on the waterfasting.org website, I mean, he talks about like things being healed of like long COVID, gut issues such as IBS, SIBO, and ulcerative colitis, autoimmune disease, allergies, asthma, chronic fatigue, rheumatoid arthritis, hormonal issues, insulin resistance, adrenal fatigue, hypothyroidism, fibroids, ovarian cysts, and even some cancers. I mean, he just has a huge list of things that he claims he's that the body can heal itself of in extended fasting sort of a thing. So again, water-only fasting environments. Well, kind of near the end of that season, kind of when we got it today around 30 or so, I was doing pretty bad. And I was finding myself more and more bedridden, I suppose. I would be in bed for like 14 hours at night and then two long naps during the day and then just basically not leaving the house. You might remember someday around, I think it was day 19, my buddy was here, Tim McDonald, and he preached at Rehope, or maybe it was day 20 or something like that. And I had the difficult experience with the memorial service. And so Kelly came up to me and she's like, Brian, you're slowing down now. And I think you just might need to consider recording the message in advance and not speaking live for three locations plus all the people time. And, you know, that was a hard moment for me. That was a pride hit. You know, I like to think of myself as I can just dig deep and do it. I can just dig deep and just go for it. But by the time I got to day 20, I'm starting to realize, no, I'm shifting into an era of weakness that I have never experienced before. And so Kelly, again, she was worried about my fast, and rightfully so. So many people were, but she was also watching me closely and she was talking to other people about it. And she was able to give me the right feedback at this moment. And I didn't want to hear it, but she was right. And so I went about and I recorded a message and for that Sunday. Now that went okay. That actually went pretty good. I remember going in to record it, I think it was Thursday. And my plan was to record it twice because you do it once, good. You do it a second time and it's usually better. So I went in and to record it twice. And man, when I was, this was Thursday. I remember just like my lungs are burning. I'm feeling dizzy at moments. I'm trying to exude the energy when it comes to preaching. And yet I was so emptied by that process. It was so difficult to do that, you know, after that recording, I'm like, well, that's going to be what it is. I have nothing left. And I went home and I kind of spiraled from that time, and continued to lose energy. So, those days, 21 to 32, just again, getting more and more bedridden. My brain was on fire mostly, but, yeah. And then the next week after that first recording, it was Sunday and the recording was being played that day. And I looked at my calendar for the week ahead and I had too many things on. And I'm like, I don't have a time to record. So that Sunday afternoon, my brain was good in that moment. I wrote the message and I went down to Southside, probably recording it while the West End evening service was happening, and recorded the next Sunday's message. And again, it was really, really difficult to do. But pretty much, like, by the time I got to the next Sunday, I was done. I was very, very, very done. In fact, the Thursday of that week, I felt like myself really declining somewhere around day 30. I think that was day 30. And again, you know, being more bedridden. I tried to go to Laura's show that Friday night, which would have been day 31. And I had a pretty good day that day, but like, you know, still all the naps, and I couldn't get through her show. My body was seizing up. My back was like cramping, like in detox things. Pretty miserable during that time. I had to leave at halftime. Sorry, Laura, but like it was a great show. But man, I went home and I won't lie. Like I was miserable. I remember walking to the car and like crying. And I'm not like a major crying person or whatever, but it was just that level of just misery. And the next morning I got up and Kelly was like, Brian, we need to talk. You know, you're basically bedridden. And I think that you're not in an okay place physically. I think that you're in a dangerous place. So I didn't want to hear that. You know, it's day 32, I guess, at this point. And I'm like, I don't want to hear this. And, you know, I've only got one week left and I'm week and a day. And I'm just going to push through, But I did start researching what she was saying. And again, on day 32, I'm a wreck and my mind isn't working very well. But then I started to read about the mineral challenges. And I'm like, okay, I know I have enough calories. I still have body fat and all that kind of stuff. Although I'm at the lowest weight of my life since I don't even know. Like at that point I had lost 37 pounds in the fast. And I had, I was 23 pounds less than when I graduated from high school. Like, so I still have the calories to burn here, but I think I ran out of the minerals and I was running low on the minerals and kind of getting into a dangerous place, but I was battling with it because, you know, 32 days, water only, not even a drop of lemon. And I'm like, it's come through so much misery this far. And yet I feel like I'm going to need to do something here. Now, again, like didn't do anything right away, but started kind of thinking about it. And Kelly had gone to the pharmacy, thanks to Gru, who's at the West End Church, and Gru had kind of given Kelly some thoughts. He seemed to understand what I was trying to accomplish, and yet also some warning signs, some things to look out for and what to do if that happened. And so Kelly, armed with that knowledge, went to the pharmacy and got some electrolyte packets. And they were just there. And I'm like, nope, water only. Just being like stubborn about it. But finally, I'm like, okay, well, maybe it is a dangerous thing, having read about it. And so I took some of the electrolytes, which was gross. You think about like, what's the first thing you're going to eat or drink when you get to that chance? It's not electrolyte salt water tasting grossness. And so, yeah. And so I had a little bit of that, and that made a difference. Actually, I had a lot of that. And that kind of made a little bit of difference. And so I started praying, okay, God, is it time to switch from water only? Which, again, like I said before I started and wrote before I started, that the water only was about the physical side, whereas the not eating food was the spiritual journey. Because I'm not like a water only snob when it comes to fasting. All my fasts are just no food. And I felt like God was saying, it's okay. And to have some broth, some bone broth, because I think that it's the saltiness, it's those kind of minerals things. I couldn't have orange juice or fruit juice because my body might go into shock because of the sugars and how much sugar is there. So like broths and things, bone broth. So I was thinking about that. And then the next day rolls around and it's Sunday. I hadn't acted on that yet. So this is day 33. And Kelly comes home from church with a jar of bone broth, saying that one of our elders' wives, Catchy, she felt like Jesus said to make me bone broth. And you know what? How kind is Jesus, right? Just the kindness of Jesus to confirm in that moment after over a month of only water and kind of wrestling with the transition on the inside. I just felt like so released from any sense of failure or guilt at that moment, where the enemy will use anything to kind of wind us up. Yeah, you switched into like drinking things and it wasn't water only for 40 days. But like, I just felt such the kindness of God with that. And she brought home some broth and I was like, okay, well, If Jesus told her to make it, and I was thinking that that's what I was going to, was on my, what I thought Jesus was saying to me the day before. So I felt really confirmed with that, and I started with that bone broth, and I was basically revived by broth over the next days, and just, again, staying away from fruit juices, because I couldn't handle that, but like just letting the minerals flow back into my body. And you might think, oh, well, now you've downgraded your fasting from water only to now you're drinking some things. I'll tell you what, that last week was profoundly spiritually powerful for me. And so, you know, looking back, I'm like, I was so out of it. I don't know what my spiritual experience would have been, but having had those minerals back in my body allowed me to be able to have the Jesus focus in those last days. I suppose I've skipped a lot of the things throughout the time. I had a lot of Jesus moments, and like spending a lot of time in his word, taking a lot of notes. My journal is filling up. I've had some God dreams in this, and some dreams that I'm like, they probably are God dreams, part of that discernment process. I felt there were some significant moments along the way of like revelation about the church and things like that. But that the last week from day 34 to day 40 was the most significant time. You know, lots and lots of dreams. I was kind of working through just being humbled by the weakness. I was still very physically weak. I hadn't been able to walk or go for walks really since like day 20. And just, yeah, not able to do a lot, but my mind was sharp. I was able to study for Scotland Bible School. I was going to be teaching Philippians, and my mind was just on fire that week of just being able to sit here at my desk and type and write and study. But day 35, 36, I don't know exactly what day to call this. I think technically it was day 36. I had the most powerful breakthrough moment. Looking back over my journal, I had been able to see like one of the things that I've been, the main thing I was seeking for obviously was for breakthrough and deliverance ministry. But the thing that God had been talking to me about even before the fast is my hesitancy. And how looking back over my journal from like summer, it's like, Brian, you have got to let go of how people think about you. You know, like you judge people. Like when I was younger, I would like think about people who did deliverance ministry with only the most negative thoughts possible, and probably lots of negative thoughts. Well, I didn't know anybody who did that. It wasn't part of my church background. And yet it was just so out there. Judge. Well, here I am now, and more alert to that, and I hear words come out of my mouth, and then I hear old Brian like judge, and I think about the people in my past who think the way that I think, and I'm like, oh man, they must be thinking what I would be thinking if I was them. Judge, deliverance ministry, demons, like Christians, like I know the teaching, I know the thoughts, and I can only imagine. And so, you know, I have been hesitant. I haven't wanted to speak clearly about what's really going on in people's lives. I try to use more gentle terms or not clear words, but God's like, Brian, if you want to see breakthrough, more breakthrough, then you're going to have to be more clear at presenting what's really going on with people. How can they get the help that they need, or how can they run after the help they need unless you just lay it out clearly? Now, I was trying, and I had times where I was better at that and worse at that, but you know, this is where day 36 comes in. So I guess it's in the middle of the night. Day 35 is over, 1:35 in the morning. And I had this incredibly powerful time where I just woke up with this warrior. It's like the Spirit of God just came on me in the most powerful way. And I could just see clearly on my life, like this spirit of rejection and spirit of fear of rejection. Kelly and I had been talking about this for a little bit and its implications on my life and on our family and, you know, and maybe potentially different people in our family. But I just felt this like, just warrior, just woke up instantly with this like aggressive spirit. And I just started rebuking spirit of rejection and spirit of fear of rejection. I was just going for it. And I could just see, it was like this, starfish looking thing on my chest, and it was like stuck on there, and I just battling. Now I'm doing this out loud because this is what you do. You do it out loud, but also Kelly sleeps so deeply that it won't wake her up. So I'm just going, and I eventually I see the starfish arms kind of like peeling off as I'm like rebuking spirit of rejection, spirit of fear of rejection, and kind of winding up in a ball, and then finally just going away. Again, it was so intense. It was so aggressive. 5 minutes. I looked at my clock afterwards. It was 1:40 in the morning, and I could just feel, I felt different. I just felt different. I also felt tired. And so I went back to sleep, kind of knowing it was over. The spirit, that warrior spirit had come over me, was done at that moment. I'm like, okay, let's go back to sleep. The next day, I could just tell the difference. I could tell the difference. And, you know, friends, I think, you know, when it came to like seeking more breakthroughs, it started with me. You know, so much of it starts with me. Brian, are you going to break free from the fears that have been holding you back from clarity? That's piece one. That's step one there. So that was a really significant time. Another time, I woke up with this word like param, P-A-R-H-A-M. I could see it in my mind. It's so vivid. I woke up. I've only had a few moments, and it was audio spoken as well, like param. And I've only had like three of these moments in my life where I've woken up with like a word that I didn't know, param. And I knew in that moment that param connected to Hebrew. And I'm like, I did take Hebrew. I mean, I was a Bible language major, and so I studied biblical languages, but I don't remember Parham. But again, it was the middle of the night, and I woke up the next day, and I saw, looked at Parham, and it's like, whoa, like Pear Hamlet, England. And I'm like, that's probably not it. So I started Googled Parham Hebrew, and found out that Parham is the Persian word for Abraham, father of many. So now I'm teaching currently a series on Abraham. So if God would have said to me Abraham, I would have been like, oh, well, I wouldn't have thought much of it. But he instead this time he uses a Persian word, tells me it's connected to Hebrew, so I don't get off into some Pear Hamlet mumbo jumbo, and getting me directed rightly towards this idea of father of many. And so I wrote that down. What are the implications of it? I don't know, but it might have to do with just, I'm assuming it's going to be the spiritual impact, hopefully, of leaning in and seeing more people freed and set free and impacting their lives. I believe when I read the Gospels that Jesus, he goes through his 40 days of fasting, and then he preaches and he casts out demons and he heals the sick. And when he does that, after telling his disciples, I'm gonna teach you how to fish for people. Here's how you fish for people. You preach, you cast out demons, you heal the sick. I'd always wanted to skip the cast out demons thing and preach, but I find that very often people in my context, there's a lot of people whose faith are really too low for healing. There's some aspects of faith there. Again, I'm not blaming anybody. There's a lot of pieces there. But when it comes to casting out demons, it doesn't seem to require much faith or any faith in the person that you're ministering to. And so it seems like it's the right, and both in Mark and Luke, they put it in this order, preaching, and then you see a story of casting out demons, and then you see stories of healing. Whereas like Matthew and John's doing his own thing. Matthew's not trying to be chronological, but that's there. Like, how do you fish for people? So for me, I had to, before I could really jump into the most effective ministry that I wanted to be in, I had to deal with that torment, that mental torment of spirit of fear of and spirit of fear of re, sorry spirit of rejection and spirit of fear of rejection. And I think that's probably going to be one of those moments. After that, so that's morning day 36, God started speaking to me about writing and about writing some books. And when I got to day 40 of the fast, after 40 days, I had felt like I'd gotten some clarity. And the first book that I was going to start was going to be this book, looking at the Ephesians series. So I'm not going to probably be writing books from scratch. I mean, we'll see what happens. But taking some of these old message series that I've studied and that I've prepared and converting them into books. The first being the Ephesians 6 series but including some aspects of the Equipped to Bring Freedom series. I don't know how that'll fit, but starting on day 40, I got my software for authoring and kind of gotten these 15 chapters done, and I actually started writing the first chapter, which was supposed to be an introduction, but it ended up being a chapter really connected to that time of fasting there, even that story right there that I just told about day 36. So kind of diving into coming out of this time, you know, I feel like I'm coming out with some real surprising freedom ministry that I didn't even really know that I need. It didn't cross my mind that I was tormented by a spirit of rejection or fear of rejection. But then once it's gone, you're like, wow, what a difference. And it wasn't until that was dealt with, then the first thing God's instructing, talking to me about writing is this book connected to spiritual warfare. And, you know, sometimes things just happen in order. And again, we'll see what happens as I get back to preaching on Sundays. We'll see what happens when it gets back to, you know, prayer ministry and things like that. I've been praying for people in the middle of the weeks during this whole fasting time and even now on Sundays. But like we're going to see like what the results will be when I get back to it. So you think now that's day 40, so we're now at the end. And I skipped a lot of the Jesus moments, which were happening throughout there, but the fast really isn't over at day 40. Monday rolls around, day 41, and it's time to start eating again. When you fast more than, say, 5 days, even 5 days, you should be intentional. But the reason why we only do 5 days at the church for our fasting is because there is a lot of grace when it comes to starting eating again. When you get to day 7, then you got to be quite a bit more careful because your body is shutting down more and more and you need to reawaken your body. And so I don't know if it was helpful or not, but I was like downing Yakult, you know, getting that bacteria into my body, yogurt, you know, trying to get that gut bacteria going and getting the, just waking up my body slowly. I had done so much research and I knew, okay, I got to basically have baby foods, you know, like sweet potatoes and yogurt and things like that that are just, you know, I had been having different beverages and not just water only, I could start with, like, I had some yogurt with banana and blueberries, and that was good. And then I had some sweet potato for lunch, and then kind of some broccoli, like really soft cooked down, soft broccoli, soft sweet potato, and just really gentle foods. But Monday night, my body rejected it. It was really scary. I felt like I'd been poisoned, and I was violently vomiting. Like I just couldn't stop. Like my body it wasn't waking back. And again, I was doing just the most gentle things. The only thing that I can think of is that actually two things. The first thing is I did try an oat cake and my body couldn't handle the oat cake. But also I kind of wonder if I was just having too much quantity of the right things, like too much broccoli, too much sweet potato. But my body, it's like, it's like we're closed for business and we've been closed for a long time, over a month here. And so it was awful. It was traumatic. I just remember just like crawling into bed and just like sweating. I think it just like just in a just a bad state. Too much information. Plug your ears if you can't listen. 2 a.m. I just woke up with just explosive diarrhea and like my body just reject. It was awful. It was so painful and miserable that day. And so then I woke up on the next day, day 41. And I'm like, okay, let's try this again, but with a lot less quantity. When you try fasting for a long period of time, you have to be careful. You have to be really intentional about what you put back in your body. And so, I had a list of the things to introduce, you know, so I went back to just some little bit of yogurt and these just smaller quantities of these things. Some soup. I had some soup that day, some sweet potato soup. And I went back to having some more broth as kind of supplement because I want to eat so much. I want to not stop eating. But you know, the funny thing, and don't tell the guy from Water Fasting this, but like the thing that really worked good for me was chocolate. I mean, it's the one thing that you're not supposed to have sugars, you know, when you come out of it. But I was reminded that my wife, when she was running, doing her marathon and training for the marathon and running a marathon, talked about like chocolate milk being a good recovery thing. So I was like, oh, you know, maybe my body is enjoying, of course, is enjoying chocolate. But I was so happy that chocolate was okay. But like introducing foods, I remember day 42, I guess. So 2 days after recovery, I tried an egg and it stomach cramping. I'm like, oh, my body can't handle the protein yet. I can't handle an egg yet. Okay. Back off from that. And we'll just try, but you know, kind of keep the going with the simple things. And, yeah, but ultimately worked out, took about a week to kind of redo, to get most of our symptoms or most of the foods being able to be eaten. I still wonder if there's a few foods that hurt my body. I had a little bit of shrimp last night, and this is a couple weeks later. This is 2.5 weeks later, and like that really hurt. So I might not be fully out of the woods yet, but the refeeding process is so important. And I remember when I was refeeding, the mind was slowing down, the weight was going up, and again, you just can't let it get to you. You start to think, oh, what if I just stay down at this weight? No, I got to put on weight and all that. I didn't do this for weight loss. I'm just gonna. I'm also extremely caffeine sensitive right now, having not had caffeine for so long. I tried one pellet in an espresso machine and in the early morning, and it kept me up all night the next night. I'm very caffeine sensitive. But anyways, when you do get back to eating, be calm about it. Be calm about it. You've practiced restraint. Keep going. And the thought that most people have is to throw off restraint. No more restraint. We fasted, and now it's just like pizza and burgers and chips and whatever. Like, no. Like, it's keep running in the vein of restraint as you come out of a fast. It's not a throw open the doors moment. It's a just be careful, be smart about it, but also like keep applying your lessons. I remember somewhere early in the early days thinking about Jesus and his fasting time. And I remember thinking, you know, so much of this fast, I was maybe a little bit of nauseous at times. I was pretty much hungry most of the time. I was pretty miserable a lot, weak a lot of the time. And, you know, when I think about Jesus's fast and the enemy tempting him, I remember thinking like, okay, Jesus was tempted by all the kingdoms of the world. Like, I will give you all the kingdoms of the world. And he was tempted by bread. And I, you know, that just made sense to me. You know, just that temptation of food. And when we come out of fasting as well, as temptation is just like, just no restraint and just dive back into food. But friends, it's okay. It's okay to be intentional about this and kind of get past those obsessions. Okay, so as we wrap things up, I'm not claiming that I did this perfectly or like this is what how everybody should do this. I really don't recommend it. I felt like God led me into this. He called me into this. The Spirit was very specific about calling me into 40 days of fasting. If he doesn't call you into this, don't do it. But I do think that shorter fasts are quite significant. In Jesus's day, the Pharisees were fasting 2 days a week, two different days a week. The Jewish people were commanded to fast one day a year. It's not like it was a major part of it, but I have found fasting to be very significant in my life and in my normal practices. If you found this interesting or helpful and somebody comes to mind that you're like, oh, I think that they should hear this, send this to them, get them connected to this. It would be helpful if you haven't subscribed yet to subscribe to this podcast, rate and review. I'll be back to interviewing some people next time. Is going to be Duncan Roseweir. And so we're going to hear about his journey next week. But yeah, if you found this helpful, help get the word out. That would be great. My heart is to see our whole generation helped, as you can see in this, reawakened to walk in fresh, close, long-lasting, life-giving connection to the Bible. Some people can fumble through this path alone, but everyone does better with help.